Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, COVID cases surging among the unvaccinated as the White House weighs whether to reverse course on masks. Plus, it's full steam ahead for the January 6th Select Committee after Kevin McCarthy pulled his picks. And there's a twist, as we're learning Nancy Pelosi may tap another Republican to join the team. And the head of the CIA calling the mysterious illness that's affected dozens of Americans real and serious. And now the officer who led the hunt for Osama bin Laden is reportedly on the case. Let's go out front. And good evening, I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, COVID becoming more aggressive. That is the warning from the nation's top doctors today. The director of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky, calling the Delta variant one of the most infectious respiratory viruses that she has seen in her 20-year career.
If you are not vaccinated, please take the Delta variant seriously. This virus has no incentive to let up, and it remains in search of the next vulnerable person to infect.
So tonight, there is a surge of people who are now getting infected. New cases are up 58% from last week, and hospitalizations are up too, up 54% compared to last week. And much of that coming from states with low vaccination rates. I'll just show you the map of the country. This is a map by county. So what you're looking at right now is a month ago. The red represents counties with high COVID transmission, very tiny, 3%. Well, things have changed since then. We're fast forwarding till today. The South and parts of the Midwest, as you can see, exploding. So now 30% of the country lives in a county that is red. This explosion of cases is why CNN is learning top administration health officials are debating whether to recommend everybody mask up again. Just moments ago, President Biden was asked if masks could soon be a reality again for Americans.
We follow the science. What's happening now is all the major scientific operations in this country and the 25-person group we put together are looking at all the possibilities of what's happening now.
We'll follow the science. As of tonight, the CDC insists the guidelines will remain as is, right? That if you're vaccinated, no masks, for now.
Is the CDC considering right now changing its mask guidance for people who are fully vaccinated?
We are always looking at the data as the data come in. If you're unvaccinated, you should absolutely be wearing a mask. If you're vaccinated, you have exceptional levels of protection from that vaccine, and you may choose to add an extra layer of protection by putting on your mask, and that's a very individual choice.
Okay, making about an individual choice. Well, some are not satisfied with that answer. Just today, Philadelphia's health officials saying today that all residents, even if you're fully vaccinated, should go back to wearing masks inside public places. In Atlanta, Georgia, the public school district announced it will require all students and staff, even those who are vaccinated, to wear masks when school starts, and it starts there in just a few weeks. The top elected official in Harris County, Texas, home to Houston, today urging everyone to once again wear masks. In Clark County, Nevada, home of Las Vegas, county workers must again mask up in public places indoors. And it was just a week ago, of course, that Los Angeles brought back its mask mandate. Remember, everyone was so surprised. We'll see that spreading as well. It is confusing. But one state at the center of the current surge will not be returning to mask mandates. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis making clear tonight that his state's policy will not change, even though Florida leads the country in new COVID-19 cases and is seeing an increase in hospitalizations.
I get a little bit frustrated when I see some of these jurisdictions saying, even if you're healthy and vaccinated, you must wear a mask because we're seeing increased cases. Understand what that message is sending to people who aren't vaccinated. It's telling them that the vaccines don't work. I think that's the worst message you can send to people at this time.
It's the Wild West when it comes to masks, with cities and states taking matters into their own hands. And that's prompting the former Surgeon General Jerome Adams to speak out, calling for more clarity from the CDC. Now, Adams, of course, you remember, last year questioned the effectiveness of masks. And he came out and he owned that, tweeting, "Last year, Tony Fauci and I famously, prematurely, and wrongly advised against masks. I felt it was the best call at the time, but now regret it. I'm worried the CDC also made a similarly premature, misinterpreted, yet still harmful call on masking in the face of the rising Delta variant." Caitlin Collins is out front live outside the White House. And Caitlin, tonight, the White House is concerned.
They're definitely concerned because their concern mainly is that we're entering a new troubling phase of this pandemic. And their primary issue is for unvaccinated people and the wide circulation of this new Delta variant, which you just said what the CDC director was saying. This is one of the most transmissible variants that she has seen in her 20 years in the public health field. And I talked to one health official earlier who told me, you know, we've been warning about this for a month. We've been seeing the consequences now of what we've been talking about for a month. And they said it's serious and it's spreading faster than we anticipated, talking about that Delta variant. And so their message tonight is trying to call out to the 50% of the country that is still unvaccinated, Aaron. And it's so serious that the president, of course, is regularly updated on what's going on with the pandemic. But today he held a briefing with his or a meeting with his COVID health team talking about what's going on with the Delta variant. What are they doing going forward? You heard him say earlier they've got a 25-person team looking at what the possibilities of what this could ultimately end up to. And it even made the president late to an event that he had here at the White House in the East Room earlier today, a bill signing, because he was dealing with this briefing. And I think it just speaks to the level of concern that is happening inside the White House about what is happening to the other 50% of the country that's not vaccinated, because they have maintained that position that if you are vaccinated, they still feel that you are well protected from this. But there are even new questions tonight about what's happening with vaccinated people and whether or not they need to be wearing a mask indoors again, as you've seen some localities say that, yes, you do need to wear one indoors, like Los Angeles. And so they're raising questions about whether or not the CDC needs to issue new guidance. What is it going to look like when children are going back to school? So these are all concerns that are happening inside the White House, Aaron, and they are very concerned about what the Delta variant is going to look like and trying to get this message out to people who are not yet vaccinated.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Caitlin, we're just looking at these, you know, numbers out of Los Angeles. Obviously, you know, you are seeing a real shift in terms of infections. Out front now, Dr. Larry Brilliant, an epidemiologist who helped eradicate smallpox. Doctor, I appreciate your time. So let's just start here with this issue of mask guidance, which I know is so fraught. The CDC got rid of it because they felt that, well, if you can't give people a prize or a payoff for getting vaccinated, they won't do it. Now, obviously, you're seeing this Delta variant spread. It's a pandemic among the unvaccinated, but of course, vaccinated people are also getting infected as well. Should the CDC issue new mask guidance?
Aaron, thanks for inviting me. You mentioned smallpox. This Delta variant has now become more infectious than smallpox was. Each new variant becomes more infectious than its predecessor. We've now reached a point that, as Rochelle said, we're seeing one of the most infectious diseases we've seen. So we go back to the question, do vaccines work? Yes, of course they do. We're asking them to do three things: protect us from getting it, protect us from giving it, and protect us from getting sick. That middle part, they're doing terrifically well. That first part, they're doing less well against the Delta. And that last part, as uncertain as it is, we think that they're not doing as well, that they're able to infect people. For both ends of that, yes, I think you should be wearing masks indoors when you're with people who are not all vaccinated.
So President Biden obviously made the point last night at the CNN town hall that the pandemic is a pandemic of the unvaccinated, which is true. But of course, you know, there's data coming out that show a shift, much like they saw in Israel, right? In Houston, they say they're seeing more what's called breakthrough infections among vaccinated people with Delta. They had a preprint report posted online. They said 90% of people who were positive had not been vaccinated, but that dropped down to 78% when the Delta variant was involved. In LA, coming out now and saying 20% of the infections that they're seeing are now among the vaccinated. Is this cause for concern?
Yes. It is indeed a epidemic of the unvaccinated, but that includes our children. They're unvaccinated. That includes your mother-in-law and my cousin. It's not enough to say that the 125 million people in the United States who are not vaccinated, that it's an epidemic only of them. No, we have to do everything we can to get as many people vaccinated as we can. And even if you're vaccinated, if you are going into an event in which there are people there who you don't know their vaccine status, you don't know the air conditioning status. It's just prudent that you wear the mask. And when you go home, it's prudent that you protect your family as well.
So let's talk about that issue, because obviously, you know, there had been reference to whether, say, parents could infect their own children, vaccinated parents, right, who did not know they had it, for example, right? Asymptomatic infection among the vaccinated. Could they spread it along to their children? One mother of two daughters, a 5-year-old and a 9-month-old, says she regrets not wearing her mask around her family, that her whole family is now tested positive, and she wishes she would have done things differently. Here she is.
The kids have been really, really sick. 103 fevers, diarrhea and vomiting. And it's been especially scary with a baby.
What's your reaction to that, Dr. Brilliant?
My sadness is my reaction to that. A paper came out last week from China's CDC, and they've studied 167 people with the virus, and they found that the Delta variant creates 1,000 times as many viral particles in your nose, in your nasopharynx, than the ancestral variant. If that's the case, then of course, if you're going places, if you're sneezing, if you're breathing, if you're singing, whatever you're doing, you could be spreading this virus even though you are vaccinated and you yourself are asymptomatic. So it's time to really get serious about this. This is a new kind of variant. We haven't seen this before.
So let me ask you, because the variants are moving quickly and becoming more infectious than, I mean, obviously I understand that, you know, in the evolution of viruses, one expects, you know, possible, you know, infectiousness to increase. But what then happens to lethality? Does it decrease so that we're just sort of exponentially getting quicker, getting closer to a virus that's you know, going to kill fewer people? Or what's happening here? I mean, you eradicated smallpox. Is this virus going to be eradicated?
I was the junior member on the smallpox eradication team. But yes, I saw the last case of smallpox in Nature, and it is not in the best interest of the virus that it kills all of its customers.
Right.
So we normally expect the virus, as it gets more transmissible, to become less lethal. But the problem is, as more and more people get it because it's more transmissible,
right,
hospitals are being overrun. Right. As hospitals are being overrun, pregnant women in an emergency can't get in. Heart attack patients can't get in. So it is causing more deaths. Maybe not from the virus itself, but certainly from the epidemic.
Dr. Brilliant, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. And next, we're going to take you to a hospital in Missouri that is inundated with COVID patients right now, many fighting for their lives after opting not to get vaccinated.
It's very real. I was so sick. I said you should not be alive.
Plus, Nancy Pelosi insisting she won't let Republican quote-unquote antics get in the way of the January 6th committee, as CNN learns another Republican could soon join the committee. And Tokyo just hours from officially kicking off a essentially spectator-free Olympics.
Almost 70,000 seats in that stadium, nearly all of them empty.
Tonight, nearly half of House Republicans, 97 members, still refusing to tell CNN their vaccination status. Meanwhile, all but one of the 220 House Democrats confirmed to us they are vaccinated. More Republicans are speaking out, encouraging their supporters to get the vaccine, but they're still defending their GOP colleagues who choose to remain silent.
We believe in health privacy. The bottom line is we believe it. It doesn't stop at the COVID door. It's every citizen's right to choose to get a vaccine, and then to choose not to reveal whether they've gotten a vaccine.
Amazingly, vaccine skepticism is also a problem in some hospitals, which have now decided to announce mandates for all healthcare workers to be vaccinated. Miguel Marquez is out front.
Healthcare workers suiting up. Sickness from COVID-19 among the unvaccinated will not stop.
The doctor told me twice yesterday that I should not be alive.
Neither Christy Henry nor her family got vaccinated. From rural Houston, Missouri, they figured they were safe. Henry rarely went out, wore a mask, and didn't see a lot of people.
I've taken care of people, you know, for 20 plus years, but never been on the receiving end.
Henry, 56 years old, was a nurse and now teaches nursing. She has a husband and six kids. She had to go on a ventilator, so did her husband. It got so bad, she wasn't sure she'd see her family again.
So it's very real. I was so sick. He said you should not be alive.
And she's lucky, the more contagious Delta variant continuing to grip Missouri, where only about 40% of its residents are fully vaccinated. Cases rising nearly 18% over the last 2 weeks. Hospitalizations and ICU admissions both up sharply since May.
I think this variant is just more severe than what we were experiencing previously.
Unvaccinated patients account for more than 97% of hospitalizations nationwide, says the CDC director.
You do not plan to get the vaccine, correct?
Correct.
Susan Dean, now retired, worked in healthcare for 25 years.
Should vaccines be mandatory for at least healthcare workers?
I don't think we know enough about the vaccine to say this is what it does.
It's a growing issue. The Mercy Hospital Network, including here in Springfield, has now mandated vaccine for all employees. Some healthcare workers here now organizing to reverse Mercy's decision. Dean says it should be a personal choice.
Anybody who is forced to take something or lose their job is, I think that just makes me so sick. We've already suffered so much.
Mercy Hospital says the public health implications and dangers of the virus far outweigh any concerns about the vaccine.
We've got a narrow window to basically sustain or even get ahead of where we are right now. As of this morning, we've got 172 people hospitalized, which is our all-time peak.
Kate Jockey is an ICU nurse in Columbia, Missouri. After a hellishly difficult year, just when she thought there was light at the end of the tunnel.
We are mentally and emotionally and physically worn out.
For Christy Henry, the message now clear.
Everybody I know and I love that, you know, you need to get vaccinated.
Now, the governor of Missouri has just ordered more resources into Springfield, Greene County, where we are right now. Everything from ambulance strike teams to help the hospitals go out and get people who may be having an issue, and to an alternative care center, which hospitals here want because they are seeing so many patients here, and not just in this area, but other parts of the state. So if people get that sick, they cannot easily get them to other parts of the state or other part, even to, into other states if need be. It's becoming just a massive backlog of patients. Again, Aaron.
All right. Thank you so much, Miguel. I appreciate it. And out front now, William and Rebecca Hughes. William was hospitalized with COVID for 14 days in Arkansas, just able to return home on Tuesday. And I appreciate both of you coming on. And William, I know you're obviously still recovering. So glad you're back home, you know, with your wife and family. I, you know, the relief and joy you must feel, even though, of course, I know you're still fighting it. So I guess let's get to the heart of the matter. I know you decided not to get vaccinated because you figured you were young and healthy and you had no underlying conditions. You weren't likely to get sick. How has this entire experience changed your view on things?
Basically, it's just made me wish that I had gotten the vaccine. I mean, the vaccine may not have kept me from getting COVID, but it may have decreased greatly the pain and suffering I had to go through to get to the point where I am now.
Yeah.
And Rebecca, I know you also were, you know, tested positive. You didn't obviously get as sick as William, but you had a lot of worrisome chest pains and things that persisted. I mean, how difficult was this for you?
It was very difficult. I had a lot of different emotions going on, worried about him, obviously, and then worried about myself, worried that I might get pneumonia and have to be admitted, and then our daughter not having either one of us, you know, here at home. And so that was very scary.
I can only imagine. I know that that's obviously at the heart of it all would have been that fear. You know, William, I spoke to one of your doctors last night, Dr. Boulding, and he says you were one of the patients who inspired him to just go out and say, I have to make a video. I have to talk to people about getting vaccinated. It's now been viewed more than 200,000 times. And when I talked to him, I asked him how he felt after treating you, people young and healthy like you who have gotten so sick. And here's what he said.
I mean, in a word, heartbreaking. You know, my voice is cracking down just even seeing that and talking about it. You know, that morning I had seen three males just in a row that were 32 years old, 28, 27, all healthy before this. And I just called our marketing team and I said, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I need a camera. I need to say something.
And you could hear his voice cracking there, your doctor. And he said it was one of the moments was when he called your family to update them on you. And he heard your 4-year-old daughter in the background, and it broke him up. I mean, William, was there a time you thought you weren't going to be there with her again?
Absolutely. I actually had that conversation with Dr. Boulding. I'm sorry. I asked him if I was going to make it, and he didn't know. He told me that I was young, I didn't have any underlying issues, and that they were going to do the best that they could do, but he couldn't make me any promises. But I'm fortunate enough to still be here.
Rebecca, I know you're now, the reason that you guys are here tonight is to try to tell others, right? So that this doesn't happen to anyone else, to get anyone you know vaccinated. What do you tell them? Obviously, people at this point have some really strong opinions on and beliefs on this. Have you been able to change anyone's mind?
Yes. Mostly family. One friend, my boss at work, they all have said that our, COVID experience has, changed their mind about the vaccine. And so I just want people to try to put themselves in other people's shoes, because I feel like the majority of people, it's hard for them to empathize with others because they're not going through it. And I just would hate for them to have to get to that point where, this happens to somebody that they love and care about. I mean, it's awful. I don't recommend, I just would recommend the vaccine for sure, because I strongly feel that, the symptoms from the vaccine, if any, would be way less than, potentially being hospitalized over this.
And William, you're home. You're home with your wife and your child. What's your message to someone who's watching, who's moved by what you say, but still on the fence about getting vaccinated?
Please just go get the vaccine. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for your family. Because I almost left my wife and my daughter here to fend for themselves because I didn't go get one.
All right. Well, I appreciate both of you very much. I know it's not easy to do an interview like this. I thank you. It makes a difference.
Thank you.
And next, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He is against lockdowns. He's against mask mandates. But he has thrown his support behind the vaccine. So what does this say, this balancing act, about his plans for the future? Plus, the CIA reportedly tapping the officer who led the search for Osama bin Laden to track down the cause of a mysterious illness that is affecting Americans overseas. Tonight, a troubling sign for the state of Florida as the Delta variant of COVID spreads rapidly there and across the country. Florida now leading the United States in the number of new daily COVID cases, averaging right now roughly 6,500 cases a day, and hospitalizations are also increasing. Could this be a problem for Governor Ron DeSantis, who repeatedly touts his response to the pandemic? Leila Santiago is out front.
If anyone is calling for lockdowns, you're not getting that done in Florida.
Governor Ron DeSantis refusing to back down from his conviction that he's successfully handling COVID in his state.
I have a 3-year-old son. You got people like Fauci saying he should be muzzled, that you should be throwing masks on these 3-year-old kids. It's totally unacceptable.
The state is averaging 6,492 cases per day, a figure that has nearly doubled in 1 week, quadrupled in a month. In just 1 week, from July 15th to July 21st, Florida has 45,449 new cases and is once again leading the nation in the number of new COVID-19 cases. DeSantis says it's just a seasonal thing.
We have a summer season here, just like last year. It started a little later this year. So you're going to have higher prevalence for the rest of July, probably into August. And then it goes back.
Doctors disagree.
We have a much more contagious variant that we didn't see in December or in April.
But then there's also this messaging from DeSantis.
And these vaccines make it so that your chance of survival is pretty doggone close to 100%.
Which is a far cry from his tone last May.
Because you got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks, Florida's going to be next. Just like Italy, wait 2 weeks. Well, hell, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened. So we've succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it.
A little less than 10 weeks after that press conference, Florida became a global COVID epicenter. Only California, with its larger population, recorded more cases at the time. So while DeSantis is encouraging vaccines, he's continuing to push back on masks and Dr. Fauci. His political operation is selling merchandise that reads, "Don't Fauci my Florida," and "How the hell am I going to be able to drink a beer with a mask on?" Right now, about 48% of Florida residents are vaccinated, and the state is now recording the most new deaths in the country this month. Yet DeSantis stands firm.
We've never had any mandates in the state of Florida, and we will not have any mandates in the state of Florida.
And Aaron, when he said that about mask mandates, he was met with applause by the supporters surrounding him. And listen, he is up for re-election next year, 2022. But there are plenty out there wondering if his eyes are on 2024 for a presidential bid.
All right. Thank you very much, Layla. And out front now, Mark Caputo, national political reporter for Politico, who has covered Florida politics extensively for 2 decades. And Scott Jennings, former special assistant to President George W. Bush and former senior advisor to Senator Mitch McConnell. So, Mark, Governor DeSantis is talking about the COVID pandemic more, supports the vaccine, but obviously very insistent he won't go back to restrictions, referring to masks as muzzling children, right? So he's got the code words here. What do you think his game plan is here?
I couldn't really say what DeSantis' game plan is. He doesn't have a big circle of advisor who leak things to the press. Mm. What I can say is that in observing Governor DeSantis, he has a very good internal compass, a good internal auger that helps him kind of navigate and spot trends, especially in the conservative movement, and get ahead of it. It's one of the reasons you see polling where if they're polling for the 2024 presidential election, he's second only to Trump. And without Trump in the race, he's lapping the rest of the potential Republican candidates. So it served him well, at least on a national stage. And on a state level, the polling also shows DeSantis is in relatively good shape heading into re-election in 2022. So what's DeSantis going to be doing now? I think it's what he did in the Taj you played earlier, which he's rather defiant with health officials.
Yep.
He is clear that he doesn't want mandates, and he'll frequently talk up Florida's success. Sometimes he'll make us sound a little more successful than we are, but at times there are critics who make Florida sound like much more of a charnel ground than it really is.
So, Scott, DeSantis plays first by wide margins in 2 CPAC straw polls this year for 2024. If Trump is not a candidate, okay, that's an important if. But if Trump's out, he's first by far. He's dodged questions about 2024, but here are some things outside COVID that he has been very willing to talk about.
Critical race theory is basically teaching people to hate our country, hate each other. It's divisive, and it's basically an identity politics version of Marxism. While some over the last year have been talking about defunding law enforcement, we're proud to say we're funding law enforcement and then some. So in Florida, we chose freedom over Fauciism, and we're much better off for doing that.
Okay, all red meat issues for many on the right, Scott. It's clear DeSantis is running, isn't it?
Oh, I think so. I mean, as long as Donald Trump isn't running, I have a hard time believing he'd make the race against Trump. And you didn't play a clip from his recent immigration visit to the border, which is another hot-button Republican topic. I think that what Mark said is correct. Ron DeSantis has a very, very smart internal barometer for what Republicans are talking about, for what they want to hear, and tapping into that zeitgeist. He did it to win the governor's race in Florida. He's doing it right now, and frankly, I think lapping the field, as Mark said, is the correct answer. I think there's other strong candidates out there, but right now, Ron DeSantis is showing he's got really strong instincts for getting reelected, but also for being a front runner for 24.
So meanwhile, Mark, Donald Trump repeatedly floats DeSantis as a possible VP pick if he runs again in 2024, and he always tries to remind DeSantis anytime that he can that DeSantis is only governor because, of course, of Trump. Here he is.
I endorsed Ron, and after I endorsed him, he took off like a rocket ship. Certainly Ron would be considered. He's a great guy. I would certainly consider Ron. I was at the beginning of Ron. I was the first one to endorse him when he came out as a congressman that a lot of people didn't know, and my endorsement helped him tremendously.
I mean, Mark, he's keeping air from going into the DeSantis balloon such that he can. I mean, how do you think DeSantis sees this?
Well, I think DeSantis, to my earlier comments and also to what Scott said, DeSantis knows what's going on here. I mean, the reality is Donald Trump lies a lot, and he said a lot of untrue things. But if there's anything he said that's 100% true, it's that. He did make Ron DeSantis what he is. Ron DeSantis knows that. And even though the polling shows that maybe President Trump's favorability rating has slipped a little among Republicans, the reality is he's the supreme leader of the party. DeSantis knows that. All the other Republicans know it. They wouldn't dare run against him. DeSantis, despite what you hear from some media outlets and some Republicans who might work for other candidates or potential candidates who want to run for president, and certainly from Democrats and some progressives, Ron DeSantis is not in a feud with Donald Trump. He's not going to get in a fight with Donald Trump. If he does, I would be totally shocked.
Okay, well, he also doesn't want to be his VP, I would imagine. Scott would be the last thing he'd want, you know, right? I mean, that's not where it's going to go. But I do want to ask, Scott, one thing here. We've obtained this exclusive audio from an interview that Carol Lenig and Philip Rucker had with Trump in March for their new book entitled I Alone Can Fix It. And this is about the crowd for Trump's speech on January 6th and the deadly riot that followed. Let me just play part of this for this conversation.
It was a loving crowd, too, by the way. There was a lot of love. I've heard that from everybody. Many, many people have told me that was a loving crowd. They were ushered in by the police. I mean, in all fairness, the Capitol Police were ushering people in. They showed up just to show support because I happen to believe the election was rigged at a level like nothing has ever been rigged before.
So, Scott, if Trump doesn't run in 2024 and DeSantis does, can DeSantis really rise and run the party and win? Let's just put that out there and win without calling that out, calling out the big lie, the rigging, all of those untrue things.
I mean, my view is whether it's Ron DeSantis or anyone else, eventually the Republican Party nominee is going to have to look into a camera and say, Joe Biden was the legitimately elected president. January 6th was a travesty. The election wasn't stolen. Biden's legitimate, but let me tell you why you shouldn't reelect him, and let me tell you why I'm better. That's what they're going to have to say. And of course, if we don't do that, our platform de facto then becomes relitigating 2020, and I don't see any way the American people are going to return us to the most awesome political power in the world if we're not willing to say what the truth is, which is, you know, this election was legit. January 6th was bad. We won't do it again. What happened was wrong. If you can't say that as the general election nominee, I think you're going to face a rough ride. And my suspicion is when someone gets the nomination, you're going to see them pivot back to a more rational place on this matter.
All right. Thank you both very much. I appreciate it. And next, a new twist in the January 6th Select Committee. Nancy Pelosi now talking to a former Republican congressman about joining the committee's investigation. Plus Tokyo. They're about to try to pull off the Olympics in the midst of a pandemic and a state of emergency, and you're going to see exactly how.
New tonight, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi looking to bolster the bipartisan image of the January 6th Select Committee. We're told she is now seriously considering naming Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger to the committee after Minority Leader McCarthy said he'll have no part of it after she vetoed two of his picks. Pelosi also meeting today with former Republican Congressman Denver Riggleman to discuss him possibly serving as an outside advisor or staffer. Manu Raju is out front. So, Manu, of course, the context around this is that there could have been a completely bipartisan commission. McCarthy had specific terms. Pelosi agreed to all of them. He went against it anyway, and now we've ended up in this situation. What else do you know about Pelosi's talks with Kinzinger and Riggleman now?
Well, she was looking to bolster the bipartisan credibility of this committee and making clear that she's ready to move ahead because she already, in her view, has a bipartisan quorum to move ahead because of Liz Cheney serving on this committee. But that may not be the only Republican serving on the committee. Adam Kinzinger, we are told, is being seriously considered for this spot. Republicans and Democrats who I've spoken to would support this. The Republican Liz Cheney said that he would be a great addition. The Democrats, including Benny Thompson, who's the chairman of the Select Committee, said that he has this has been discussed with the Speaker, and he also said that this would also be a positive addition. Now, Denver Riggleman, the former congressman, is being looked at as an outside advisor, a Republican, to help with the investigation going forward. This is someone who Liz Cheney herself has recommended here. So this is occurring, Aaron, as this committee is staffing up. They announced some key staff hires tonight, but they are planning to move pretty quickly on this investigation once they get through its first hearing next week and then map out their investigation for the weeks ahead.
Right, and it's important to emphasize, this hearing's happening next week. Whoever's on it, it's going ahead. So when Congresswoman Liz Cheney first agreed to be part of the committee, it appeared she'd be punished by her party. But what are you hearing now about how that's going to play out in the GOP?
Yeah, in talking to a wide range of Republicans today, my colleague Melanie Zanona and I heard that there's just not much appetite among Republican lawmakers to punish Liz Cheney at this moment, believing that it would amount to a distraction of sorts as the party tries to retake control of Congress next year. Of course, she was pushed out of her leadership position already after her battle with Donald Trump, and that led her to ultimately accept this post on the Select Committee. But Kevin McCarthy today sidestepped a question about whether Cheney should be punished. Steve Scalise, the number two Republican, would not say that when I asked him directly if Cheney should be punished. He said she should step down from the committee here. So you're seeing what the Republicans are saying. We'll see if they change their tune at the moment. But right now, it sounds like, Aaron, they're not going to punish her any further.
All right. Thank you very much, Manu. And next, a small but growing number of Olympic athletes testing positive for COVID as we take you above the bubble. It's almost literally that, meant to keep them safe.
Some 18,000 athletes and officials will be staying in those buildings down there.
CI director says he's throwing the best the United States has to find out who is behind the mysterious Havana Syndrome attacks on Americans. Tonight, the opening ceremony at the Tokyo Olympics, just hours away. There'll be 950 VIPs taking part in a stadium that seats 70,000. This is more Olympians tonight are testing positive for COVID. Will Ripley is there. He'll take you inside the Tokyo Olympics tonight.
Taking off, it really hits you. Hosting the Tokyo 2020 Summer Games is a massive logistical challenge. One building really stands out. Tokyo's $1.5 billion Olympic Stadium.
Right now, we're flying over the centerpiece of Tokyo 2020. Almost 70,000 seats in that stadium. Nearly all of them empty.
The Olympics' first ever spectator ban. A dramatically scaled-down opening ceremony. Organizers say only about 950 VIPs attending, including U.S. First Lady Jill Biden. We get a closer look on the ground.
This is as close as most Japanese are able to get to their Olympic stadium. Police have shut down surrounding roads and even fenced off the perimeter.
For everyday folks, this is their only shot at seeing the Olympics up close.
Public opinion polls show Japanese overwhelmingly don't want the games to go forward, but you wouldn't know it looking at these long lines of people who are waiting to take selfies in front of the Olympic rings.
I'm worried about the Olympic bubble. It's not perfect, but I want to cheer on the athletes.
That bubble to protect athletes from COVID-19. A small but growing number of athletes are testing positive, even inside the Olympic Village.
So excited to go to Tokyo, but I'm also like terrified the fact that you fly all the way there and then test positive.
Athletes are tested for COVID daily, asked to arrive 5 days before competing and leave 2 days after. From above, you can see how packed it is.
Some 18,000 athletes and officials will be staying in those buildings down there. You can see a lot of their national flags on the sides.
Most of the Olympic venues are here in Tokyo. Japan invested billions, only to have fake crowd noise echoing through all those empty stands.
This is going to be an Olympics like none other. And the world is watching. They want to see if Japan can pull this off in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of a state of emergency, without the Olympics turning into a super spreader event.
Aaron, I used to be based here in Japan. That was my first time flying over Tokyo in a helicopter like that. The city, it looks magnificent. And it's just such a shame that down here on the ground, it is such a mess right now. Yesterday, they reported almost 2,000 cases, their highest daily number in more than 6 months. So everybody really rooting for these Olympics. Jill Biden is here, but even the mastermind, the guy who sold the Olympics to the Japanese people, the former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, he's not even going to the opening ceremony in about 11 hours from now.
Which is amazing. I have to say, though, it does look beautiful there this morning, and flying over it, I guess it's a sort of a beacon of hope. That was absolutely gorgeous. I can only imagine what it was like to see that megacity from the sky. Thank you. And next, the officer who helped track down Osama bin Laden is now reportedly in charge of tackling the mysterious illness affecting American diplomats in Washington, D.C. and around the world. New tonight, the CIA director revealing that the CIA is taking aggressive action related to the mysterious Havana Syndrome. The mysterious attacks, most recently reported in Vienna, Austria, have hit Americans around the world, including in Washington, D.C., near the White House. Many victims suffering with debilitating symptoms, severe headaches, disorientation, piercing noises, the source of which is unexplained. In an exclusive interview with NPR's Mary Louise Kelly, William Burns says he's, quote, throwing the best we have at this issue, putting an officer in charge who led the hunt for Osama bin Laden.
The National Academy of Sciences a year ago, in a very extensive report that they did, suggested that the most plausible theory for what caused this was some form of directed energy, and that sort of narrows then, you know, the number of potential suspects who could have used this, have used it historically, and have the reach to do this in more than one part of the world.
Burns says Havana Syndrome cases number in the hundreds here and overseas. Thanks for joining us. It's time for Anderson.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.